Isabel Charlet, and Danielle Smith. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO's News in Depth. Yvonne Rivera speaks with Reyna Lopez from Pacoon about the upcoming February 16th strike to draw attention to what not having immigrant workers would mean.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
It's an honor to be here with you, Reyna Lopez. Reyna Lopez is, for those of you who may not know, she is the executive director and chairwoman of Pacoon, the Farm Workers Union. And it's an honor having you here at KBOO. And then having this opportunity to talk to you about the a day with our immigrants, the series of events that you've been holding in Salem. And then I'd like to ask you a little about this movement, since there is a series of dates that you'll be observing. And if you have a little bit more time, you know, to talk about your legislative priorities and information for the public at large that listens through KBOO in all of its geographical reach, which goes from Portland to Hood River and from Hood River to McMinnville, Salem, and almost half of the northwest portion of Oregon. It's a pleasure having you here, Reyna Lopez.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We had been receiving news of your really successful couple of events that you have held in Salem, Oregon, in regards to a call, from what I hear, for a general strike, from what I hear. And if you could, you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, so if you could tell us about the Day Without Immigrants.
Yes, absolutely. And you can say it. We're building for a general strike, and we're building towards a big, fat general strike on May Day, May 1st. But in between then, we're calling for a day without an immigrant. February 16th actually marks the next day without an immigrant. It's a series of days that we've been organizing once a month. The next one is on President's Day. And it really is a call to action that invites every community member. It doesn't matter if you're an immigrant or not, even though technically most of us are immigrants if you're not Native American, right? But we're asking you to stand with us. Stand up against the Trump administration's unlawful attacks upon immigrant communities. We've already seen that thousands of people who are assumed to be migrant are often being targeted by ICE simply for the color of their skin. And we have seen that this administration has really taken advantage, I think, of the fact that many people want to see a fix to the broken immigration system and is using that to implement his authoritarian regime. So, you know, for us, why we're taking action, I mean, it really, for me and for Pacoon, it really started last year when we were seeing a massive increase of the presence of ICE and Border Patrol in our communities. They started to terrorize our kids. They started destabilizing our local businesses. Many of these businesses in on Front Street, all the little immigrant-owned businesses are closed right now. They started to harm our community. We work jobs that nobody else wants to do. They are backbreaking. They're low paid. And yes, they're sometimes dangerous. And we helped make this country wealthy. And this is why we wanted to really center the fact that we have something that Trump, his cronies, all those big corporations want, right? They want our labor. They want our time. They want our attention. But that, but for some reason, they don't want us, right? There's a that's a big tension that's coming into play. And I think for many of us who are scared to leave our house, we're scared to go to work, we're scared to take our kids to school, scared to do basic things, we wanted to figure out how we turn that absence into power, right? How do we turn being like this, being the victim of something into powerful? And that's why we said, you know what, let's take advantage of the fact that we're already doing these things.
Yeah.
And let's call for practice strikes to lead up to May Day that include everybody. So that's why on these particular dates, once a month from now until May Day, we're calling for people to practice a day without an immigrant and observe a day without an immigrant. No work, no shopping, no school. And we have three pretty simple goals when it comes to this. One is that we want an immediate end to ISIS terror. And we want them out of our communities. We don't want them here. We don't need them here. Nobody wants them here. And they need to get the heck out, right? Number two is that we want to build solidarity as immigrant workers with everybody else. You know, we want to see solidarity amongst allies in every sector, in business, in education, in any place that many of us aren't. We want to figure out a way how to build this solidarity across sectors. And then the last one is that we want to see a path to citizenship. We want to see a path to citizenship that betters our democracy and our economy for all. And so what happens on a day without an immigrant? Well, we're asking you to actually take the day off. Yes, we're asking you to do that, not to participate economically. We want a day without an immigrant for all sectors of the economy. And on these days, there will be folks that can probably only observe the day, right? But there are going to be many folks that can actually go out and participate in visibility actions. And there have been visibility actions all across the state. We've already had thousands of people participate all across the state, from Hermiston to Eugene to Salem to Cambie, many places across the state that are having their own days without an immigrant and organizing their actions. On President's Day, we're going to have a march at the Capitol, and that's going to kick off at 11 a.m. and go to 1. And it's a great day to have a march, not only because it intersects with our day without an immigrant, but also because the legislature is actually hearing the immigrant justice package, which is a package of 10 different bills that could really make a difference in Oregon and protecting our constitutional rights and how we make them real for Oregonians. What can the state do to make sure that Oregonians are protected in these moments where Trump has a secret mass police that is attacking people all across the state?
Yes. Thank you for reminding me that there's a simultaneous importance on being there on February the 16th, in view that the legislative session for 20 is a short one. It's only a month. But if we could go now to ask you about PECUN's legislative priorities for this short session.
It's going to be a short session, like you said, so we really have a pretty short amount of time to get some of these things moving. But as you know, immigrant Oregonians, our families, are being violently targeted by ICE, and it's resulting in devastating impacts for our communities. So that's why we decided to go in with dozens of other organizations around the 2026 immigrant justice package. So I think I said 10, but there's actually 12 bills in the package, and PECUN is leading one of those bills, but we are supporting and doing a lot of behind the scenes work on the rest of them. But we kind of split them up between several organizations, and the one we're leading is called the Protect Your Door Act. Mm-hmm. And that is House Bill 4114. And basically it would target and get to the point of these mass federal agents that are conducting raids across Oregon who are refusing to identify themselves and ordering residents to open doors at all times, targeting people at courthouses, hospitals, and in their homes. And this bill would basically require the federal government to register their operation in advance with DOJ, and it mandates visibility and IND of that agency's IDs. We know that it is a liability for these agents to just be roaming around, not identifying themselves. We've even heard about bounty hunters targeting our communities, and we don't even realize that they're bounty hunters until we're already on the other side of the border. So these are dangerous things. It enables situations like these, but also I think everybody should be concerned that there's a masked secret police force out there that's doing the bidding, the illegal bidding of the president. So these are things that we want to try to see if we can address and push those boundaries in the legislative session. And I also want to uplift another one that I think is really important, because it is one of the central pillars for the Oregon for All Coalition, which is the Equity Core of Oregon program. Many of you have heard this 1-800 number that we send to y'all that you can call in case you do need some kind of deportation defense services. And in order for that to continue to be available to the public, we need to be able to get some more investment. So we're asking for $10 million total for Equity Core of Oregon, and also for the Children's Stability Fund. And the Children's Stability Fund would go into direct assistance for families who are being separated from their caregivers to cover utilities, housing, food when their breadwinner is detained. And we know that there have been many breadwinners that have been detained, leaving children behind, leaving the community to pick up the pieces.
Yes, I wanted to say that I have observed, unfortunately, that when the main caregiver, the main income earner is gone, there's huge problems, to the extent that some people, because, say, mother with three children is left behind alone, and there's no way for her to get all the rent money together. It's an impossible situation when the mother is then choosing to self-deport rather than being thrown out onto the streets. And so it's really, you know, there's a lot of problems that are arising from this, you know, this really illegal way of going after people by these bounty hunters.
Absolutely. And I think that, I mean, we're only scratching the surface of what kind of harms this administration is doing to children and families. But I think that here in Oregon, we can do something by passing the items on the immigrant rights package, and to make sure that we continue to show our communities that we're going to protect their constitutional rights, and that we're going to continue to invest in programs and priorities that keep Oregonians safe.
I wanted to ask you, we are seeing a lot of solidarity with immigrants and refugees, as you mentioned, through the work of PIRC, the Portland Immigrant Rights Center, the Oregon for All, which I think PICUN is part of, and of course ECHO and other coalitions. Is there, I am hoping that that these appropriations do go through, because the work of immigrant workers is basic for Oregon's economy and the U.S. economy, while people are suffering all kinds of retaliation, both at work, people who can stay, and then the fear since there's no prohibitions anymore against showing at places that are sensitive, for instance, church, home, preschool to high school. And so it's really, really difficult sometimes to just keep peace of mind. Do you have any remarks about this?
Yes, we are trying to get more protections for Oregonians around House Bill 4114, the Protect Your Door Act, which does include, what do you do if ICE comes to your hospital, your home, any place that would be a private area that they would try to get access to. But I also want to uplift something else that Bekun did to make sure that we're addressing these situations. Back in January of 2025, the Trump administration changed a policy, a pretty old policy, that basically made hospitals, schools, churches, places of worship, places of civic activity, off limits to ICE. And they basically changed it and made it free reign for ICE to go to these places. So what we did with our partners at Innovation Law Lab was we filed Bekun versus Noam. And Bekun versus Noam is a lawsuit that basically goes directly at this, right? They should not be allowed to go to these places. These are secure locations. We need people to be able to go to the hospital and not be afraid to go there. We need people to be able to get their kids to preschool or to school, any place like that. So we need people to be able to go worship and go to church, safely. And these places need to continue to be secure locations that is off limits to ICE and Border Patrol. That is something that's in progress and it's processing nationally. So even if we do pass Protect Your Door here locally, we know that there's always that risk that the administration won't respect what we're doing here. And, that other layer of protection is having the courts take action, which we've seen a lot of, over the last year and a half, right?
Before we end, I wanted to ask you for for the way to get in contact with Bekun and then with the actions that are coming, how would you obtain information about the Days Without Immigrants, and how can other communities, other than the labor community or the student community, get a hold of Bekun in order to show their solidarity?
Yes, I mean, there's many ways. You can visit our website at bekun.org and leave us a message, sign up for our e-blast where you can get more updates around our org in general. For folks who are wanting to get a hold of where your next Day Without an Immigrant action is going to be, you can go to our Instagram page, Bekun Oregon, our Facebook page, where we're posting the links. And when you sign up to the event, you will receive the location based off of what actions are nearest by you. The big one, the big anchor action is going to be in Salem at 11 a.m. on Monday, February 16th. We're going to do a march there, but there's going to be actions in different cities across the state, too, that are echo actions as well. And I would say, too, that for folks who are interested in endorsing and becoming supporters of Day Without an Immigrant, whether you're a business that might want to get involved, you can send us a message at info@bekun.org. That's info@pcun.org.
Thank you, Ms. Reyna Lopez. It's been an honor speaking to you. I know you're super busy, but thank you for giving this interview to KBOO Radio and KBOO News. It's a pleasure.
Pleasure's all mine. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
That was Yvonne Rivero speaking with Reyna Lopez from PCUN, Oregon's Farm Workers Union, about the upcoming Day Without an Immigrant strike on February 16th and their priorities for the state legislative session. This is KBOO News In Depth. The Oregon legislature is also considering a bill to disconnect certain parts of Oregon's tax code from the federal tax code. Big cuts at the federal level earlier this year have meant a loss of revenue at the state level, since Oregon copies federal tax code changes very closely. Senate Bill 1507 would disconnect a few of these changes. I spoke with Daniel Hauser from the Oregon Center for Public Policy to learn more about the bill and why he supports it. So you've joined us today to talk about SB 1507 in the Oregon legislature right now. Walk us through this. What is the function of this bill?
Yeah, you bet. So this bill is a response to a giant federal tax and budget package passed last summer. Oregon connects very closely to changes in the federal tax code. So when Congress passed this enormous tax package that includes, you know, for an Oregonian in the top 1%, they would get a tax cut of about $42,000. For an Oregonian at the bottom, you're earning maybe 15 grand a year, they'll average about a $70 tax cut. So this federal package includes just this enormous wave of tax cuts. And with it, it partly pays for those tax cuts by cutting health access for coverage for families, low and working class families. It cuts nutrition assistance. And so basically this big bill, HR 1, it was passed last summer. What it meant for Oregon is because we connect so closely to those tax cuts, Oregon loses almost $900 million in revenue in our budget that we're in the middle of right now. So SB 1507 is a response to the fact that our budget had a huge hole blown in it by this federal package, and we need to figure out what to do about it. So with those almost $900 million in lost revenue because of this bill, SB 1507 rolls back three of the dozens of tax breaks that were in it. So the three tax breaks, first is a tax break for what's called bonus depreciation. Bonus depreciation is a way that businesses can push up into 1 year all of the things, the capital assets, the, you know, equipment, machines, cars, what have you, that they buy. Instead of deducting it over time, they deduct it all at once. And so Oregon, with SB 1507, is going to no longer allow that for really big businesses. Small businesses have a separate provision that they can still use. The second thing it'll do is it will disconnect Oregon from the auto loan interest deduction. The auto loan interest deduction is a policy created by HR 1 that allows folks on brand new cars to deduct the interest on the loan. But does not provide any benefit to folks who are buying, you know, a struggling family that buys a used car would receive no benefit. So Oregon's going to disconnect from that as well. And the third tax policy that would be disconnected from is what's called Qualified Small Business Stock Exclusion, QSBS. This sounds nice, but it's really a tax break that disproportionately helps venture capitalists and millionaires when they invest in startups, commonly like tech startups in California as a good example. So those three measures are what we're disconnecting from HR 1, and that'll bring in about $340 million in the current budget period. Now, the bill gets more complicated because it also includes two expanded tax breaks here in Oregon. One of them is called a jobs credit. This is a corporate tax break for hiring new employees. If those employees make about 150% of the minimum wage, and you have more employees than you had last year, then you can get a $1,000 tax credit for each of those employees, up to 10 per employer. And then the last provision, actually probably my favorite provision in the bill, is an expansion of Oregon's earned income tax credit. And the EITC is sort of the shorthand for the earned income tax credit. The EITC helps more than 200,000 working families. Disproportionately helps families with children, lifts many families out of poverty, and is just a really, really incredible way that we can help low-income working families make ends meet and put cash in their pockets to help pay the bills.
Thank you for that explanation. With the money that would still come into Oregon if Oregon disconnects from these particular tax breaks, why is it important? Like, what is the scope of the budget issues that Oregon is facing, and how would this make a difference?
Because we would be losing those almost $900 million in revenue without action on disconnect, Oregon is left with, even if we pass SB 1507, there's a real risk of hundreds of millions of dollars in additional cuts. That's why we actually called for them to go even further than in SB 1507. So, you know, it's likely without action and potentially even with it, we will see impacts in funding to our schools and our communities. We'll see reductions in investment potentially for behavioral health treatments. We could see the number of kids and families in the state receiving help paying for childcare drop. There's actually a very real risk right now that if the legislature doesn't step up and invest more money in our employment-related daycare program, which is a Oregon's like primary way that we help working families afford childcare. If they don't step up and find another 70 or 80 million this budget, families are going to start getting kicked off of the program who are currently receiving support in the next year. So I think it's really a tough budget picture right now. SB 1507 will make meaningful progress in helping to fill some of those gaps, but we certainly hope the legislature will keep pushing more and bring more revenue in by disconnecting from even more of these wasteful tax breaks in HR 1.
I'm curious about how common it is for the federal tax code and state tax codes to be directly linked in this way. I'm unfamiliar with the issue. Is that something that happens in most states?
So it's pretty common if states have an income tax, corporate and personal, for them to link to federal definitions. But it's really uncommon. I think there's only three states that link to it in the way we do. And so the two key ideas here are where you connect to the tax code. You can connect to a little bit of it or a lot of it. And if you connect automatically or with a fixed date. So for example, a state that has what's called a static connection would just connect to the tax code as of January 1st, 2025, let's say. If you have a rolling connection like Oregon does, that means whenever the tax code's changed, we just automatically replicate it. The legislature doesn't have to do anything unless they want to stop it and roll it back later, but any changes are just automatically rolled into our tax code. And so Oregon is one of only a few states that connects both in a rolling basis, which means we automatically do it, and we connect to a whole lot of the federal tax code. And so we are uniquely positioned to be in a really tough place with our budget this session because of our really robust connection to the federal tax code that's automatic.
Has an unlinking, I guess that's kind of the term I'm using, but with what SB 1507 wants to do, pulling apart some of these tax breaks, has something like this been attempted before in Oregon?
Certainly. I mean, we have a long history of after the federal government passes a big tax package of looking at it closely and disconnecting from some of the provisions, unlinking from some of the provisions that are the least aligned with Oregon's values. The last big Trump tax package passed in 2017 led Oregon's legislature in 2018 to disconnect from a very regressive tax break for certain business owners that would have sent over $1 billion from Oregon's general fund out in new tax breaks over the 5 years after it was signed. So that's just one recent example. We've also even disconnected from bonus depreciation in the 2000s. Whenever there's big federal tax packages passed, Oregon regularly kind of evaluates it and makes some strategic disconnections, just like we would be doing now.
What's been the reception so far from lawmakers and Oregonians? Obviously, the session just started, but it's a quick one. How's it been going?
Yeah, I think folks that really believe in the importance of investing in our communities, believe in the services the state provides to help people afford childcare, afford education, afford housing, afford healthcare. Folks who are engaged in the legislative process because they share those values are, I think, really encouraged by SB 1507. I think we all know that there's a tremendous need to do more. The state needed to raise revenue to invest in our communities before HR 1 was passed, and that need remains even with SB 1507. So I think it's a really important step in the right direction. It helps ameliorate some of the potential harm that will come to us because of these federal actions, but it is not going to fund everything our communities need. And so I think it's clear it's an important step in the right direction, but it's not going to be enough. And we hope that they'll continue taking more steps.
As you've been working on this issue, have you encountered any myths or like misunderstood aspects or conceptions that people might have about this issue?
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole array of misconceptions around our connection to the federal tax code. I mean, I think a lot of folks believe that we're disconnecting from everything that was in HR 1, and we're only disconnecting from three of the dozens of provisions that were included in it. Other folks tend to think of this as like a tax increase, when in reality, folks will just be paying the same amount. I mean, of the dozens of provisions we're not touching, it's a tax decrease. And of the three we're touching and disconnecting from with this bill, those are just bringing the policy back to, where it was in the past, where it was before auto loan interest deduction was created, Before the QSBS, the small business tax break was created, and when businesses depreciated their stuff over, you know, however many years it took to match the schedule. So, you know, this isn't an enormous change necessarily. It's just, you know, largely, you know, carefully considering what our priorities are and you know, realigning them. Another big confusion point and maybe myth about our disconnection is that people all still get the federal version of these tax breaks. You know, the state can't set federal tax code. And so, you know, federal income tax breaks are going to keep going to Oregonians, even if we connect or disconnect.
If our listeners are interested in finding out more about this issue, what do you recommend?
Yeah, I'd encourage them to come to occpp.org. We've published a number of papers. You can look at our social media accounts where we've got videos of people impacted by the budget cuts, explainers on how these tax policies are the right places to look to try and raise some revenue and fill in those budget cuts. We have, yeah, reports, fact sheets, all the things someone might need to try and get a handle on these complicated tax policy issues. And that's occpp.org.
Well, Daniel, thank you so much for taking the time to walk us through this today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. It's complicated, but I hope this helps people get a handle on it.
That was Daniel Hauser, Deputy Director at the Oregon Center for Public Policy, speaking with me about SB 1507, which would disconnect a few parts of Oregon's tax code from its federal counterpart, preserving some revenue for the state as it faces a tough budget cycle. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public